right, sweetie, you ready?
Of course.
Outside today, reporting live from the beating heart of Nutmeg Country.
Outside Edition, cable actuated and yes. Opinionated.
This is Alt Bike now.
Alternative radio.
For alternative cyclists. I'm Ronnie Romans.
And I'm Aria Vingegaard.
Oh, I like that.
Thanks for joining us.
It's a little foreshadowing, you know? So are you saying... after our Hot or Not last week, you've had some thoughts, and now you're crushing hard on Jonas?
I'm not crushing hard on Jonas. I'm crashing hard on Jonas.
Oh, my goodness. You are sharp this morning.
Two cups of tea, baby.
Folks, a little foreshadowing there. We've got a lot to talk about when it comes to Tour Goss this week.
It's not foreshadowing.
It isn't?
That's a literary device, but because this has already happened. So.
Oh, aww. Well, foreshadowing in the context of this pod.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not that dumb. I'm just blonde.
Blonde's right snap.
I'm naturally blonde, folks. Believe it or not.
I think everyone believes you. You bring it up a lot. You pride yourself on being a natural blonde.
We're among the rarest in the world.
I thought it was the redheads.
Well, no one's dyeing their hair red just for fun. Everyone wants to be
okay.
blonde.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Okay.
That song about how you're always having fun out there.
Yeah.
And you are.
I am having a good time. Folks, we... Headlines, Hot Goss. We're going to do a little tour stuff, our alt takes on the tour. People seem to like last week, so we say this every week. People seem to like it. But we're sticking with the TDF stuff, Tour de France stuff, in the beginning of the show. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to move on to a new...
There's something called unity, as one stand together.
UNITY.
Oh, that's a great
A little
unity.
Queen Latifah yep. reference there about the new a new Kona release. That's an expedition mm-hmm. style bikepacking touring bike. And we're going to talk.
Which is an allegory of a warthog.
What does allegory mean?
Reference to a literary
thing
of the past.
So literate.
Or usually the Bible.
Oh, interesting.
English as a third language. You got to learn, honey.
The only book I know of is the Book of Heavy Metal.
The Book of Heavy Metal.
yes.
Read it.
And then don't real need life no flashy that. House, kid's car, or ugly wife. The only things I want are what my parents don't.
Oh.
Need no widescreen TV?
Nope.
No, in all honesty,
yep.
the only thing I want to be is in the Book of Heavy Metal.
You are... making your way.
Yeah. So
real life report backs. I had a storm of the century.
Yeah. Aria got into a long. You did an
okay,
eighth. Okay. Well, I mean, I think that's.
We'll get into that later. We also have introduction to local pervert and favorite friend here right now. Hot
yeah,
Alex is in
mm-hmm,
the building.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk a little bit about a few of our local riders here, about their inception into the alt bike world and how
yeah.
that happened.
I think it'll be nice to introduce our friends
yeah.
who we ride with regularly.
And finally, really the namesake of the episode, we've got gatekeeping in alt cycling.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about that and, you know, I think you're going to want to stick around and listen.
A little philosophical,
yeah.
a little spicy.
Yeah, we're going to get into it. So,
then we'll wrap up with contributors.
Yeah,
so,
without further ado, let's start with the Tour de France racer.
Tell me about Jonas.
Well, folks.
What happened?
Folks, what happened is Jonas. Had as if you've been following along with just
Stage
even
15.
With ours, Jonas who's been second in the Tour de France to
mm-hmm.
Tadej Pogačar or second to Tour de France to Tadej Pogačar the last two seasons, but has won the previous 2 years before that,
yeah.
and also just won the Giro earlier on in this year, really was Tadej's only competitor, if you want to call him that.
Well, he is.
Yeah. I mean,
he is. There's no
there
one else.
Are no competitors
yeah.
to Tadej, but
it's,
he was the closest.
It's Jonas.
And he
yeah.
definitely had the respect of Tade. Jonas can be a very one-dimensional rider compared to Tade, but you know, a lot of us were rooting for him, at least in the back of our heads, if we weren't in the forefront, because he's the underdog.
For sure. All the talking heads were kind of saying, you know, he's in really good form. I wouldn't count him out. And then he goes down pretty hard.
This is stage 15 that he went 15, down? I mean, it was a mountain
right before,
stage, big mountain stage, one that really favors him with a mountaintop finish.
Exactly. Summit finish is his specialty. Mm-hmm. He is crowned as being one of the best or the best mountain rider in, well, living today.
Yeah, modern tour history. And everyone today is seemingly leaps and bounds better at what they do than the riders of the past. I'll be the first to admit that. Being a nostalgist myself, it's hard to say. But, you know, we've already had the fastest stage ever of the tour, which is earlier in the week, which is interesting that it had had stuck around for 20 something years. It was a stage that Mario Cipollini had, now acclaimed wife beater Mario Cipollini, had won. Mm-hmm. Acclaimed, could that be a, I don't think I ever used that word right.
Infamous. abuser.
Well,
women.
Yeah, but you know, we
domestic.
If you take that out of the equation, pretty exciting rider to watch.
Terrorist.
And he was, you know, obviously a lot of what
Chipoli.
Yeah, Chipoisms are important as far as the culture is concerned.
Just
but
juiced up and meaty, you know.
Anyway, that record stood for I don't know how long. 20 plus years. So that was broken. So, I mean, this tour is breaking records left and right. People are going faster than ever.
It seems like every year they say that.
But I mean, I guess because it's progressively faster.
Yeah.
And then when you have someone like Tade kind of just pushing the envelope.
Well, that's why the talking heads were saying Jonas is going to do so well, you know, because mm-hmm. he's been crushing his numbers. He's just like upped the game. He's doing mm-hmm. better than he's ever done. And he seemed overall really calm.
I wouldn't say better than he's ever done. I mean, he's won the tour, and in my opinion, he was not looking, and a lot of other people's opinions,
it's
he was
just because
a shell
the pace
of what he once was.
Well, here's what I'm saying is the pace of the entire peloton has just upped, but Jonas is performing his best numbers ever.
Yeah, true.
Like, that's what I'm saying. He was very happy because all of them say the best you can do is the best you mm-hmm. can do, and then everything else is, you know, up to G-O-D. You know what I'm saying?
Well, let's run through a timeline here.
Oh, my God. Is P.O.D. a Christian band because it's G-O-D and P.O.D.? All right. Side tangent. My bad. Being outside is very distracting for me.
Yeah,
I'm looking at birds. I'm looking at the wind.
Let's paint a picture for people here. We're outside today because our local pervert, Alex, is working on our bathroom. So, you know, we're outside today. That's why he's going to pop in and talk about bikes with us a little bit. So we're outside. It's a beautiful scene. We're looking at a bunch of wildflowers. You know, it's a little bit overcast. It's breezy.
Perfect.
It's very comfortable.
There's all these bees.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at an apricot tree with apricots actually growing on it.
So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So, stimulation-wise for this ADHD child.
I want to get us into the timeline. Back to France.
Back to Jonas.
I wanted to work into that.
Okay, my bad.
I'm going on the timeline here, okay?
Yeah, I'm rabid.
So we had a big mountain mix-up, okay? Mm. Tade had stamped his authority on previous mountain stages, but we were all saying, oh, we're not at the high mountains yet where Jonas really hits mm-hmm. it off. You know, we're still finishing on, you know, like flats or like slight descents where Tade dominates because he's such a powerful rider. Mm. So this was really going to be Jonas's chance to really show us what he's made of on stage 15.
And
even
the
though
team was gearing up for it.
The team was gearing up for it. I mean, the team was working for Jonas this whole stage. You could tell that he was planning
yep.
something. Mm-hmm. Jonas, even though he had been bruised and battered by Tade this whole tour, you could tell he still believed. Not that he didn't believe, he was going to try his hardest. That's a really nice thing about Jonas. He's always going to try his hardest. He doesn't give up. He just, sometimes he mentally maybe becomes completely so battered that it looks like he's giving up, but he's a very relatable character, I think, in the arc of heroes, right?
Yeah. He's a relatable demigod.
Right, right.
Yeah. He's Maui.
So the night before, both Jonas and Tade were checked by doping control.
2 a.m.?
2 a.m. for Jonas and 5 a.m. for Tade. Now, ordinarily, to give you some context, it's usually they test, they respect the rider's sleep. Because imagine, you're doing these 130-mile stages with, you know, 13,000-plus feet of elevation. Day in and day out, you're 15 stages in.
So much
You
got to
sleep. You got to sleep. So the sleep is so important. Like, these guys are, like, you know, the rest is so important, not only for your physical abilities, but for your mental
recovery, acuity.
And so, you know, generally they don't wake riders up in the middle of the night to test for doping. But I guess the French authorities had, I can't remember the exact terminology, but they had great suspicion, enough suspicion to wake these guys up and test them. A few other teams were tested too.
Is that the word? Is that the official word?
It was like even more official than that.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we know it's, you know, we all want to leave the doping era behind, but when you're faster than the doping era, it does open up a lot of questions. I honestly do believe nutrition was so bad before, and it was something from my, like, from a nutrition background that I had coming into racing. I was appalled by how little people knew about actual nutrition, and how they were still, you know, gauging it on, as we keep bringing up, the horse meat, the cheese wrapped in horse meat,
right.
Or just, you know, the popcorn diet to lose weight. So, you know, there was a lot of room for improvement. But, you know, there's always got to be suspicion when these guys are just pulling these superhuman efforts. So
those numbers match exactly to, like, how much performance benefits you can see when you take this substance. Yeah. And it's like, oh, 10% improvement. And then you see, oh, you've got 10% improvement.
Right.
That's a little sus.
Yeah. You know,
to knock on the door at 2 a.m.
At 2 a.m. and
Pourquoi?
Yeah, so Jonas has got to pee in a cup at 2. He got to produce some urine at 2 a.m. And so anyway, we'll put that in a little compartment, okay, for later. So the stage carries on. It was flat-ish, and then it ended with an above category mountain climb.
It was a bit bumpy. There's a couple
pimples in there. So it's the Jonas's team, Jumbo. Not Jumbo, sorry. Visma Lisa bike is pushing at the front. Obviously, they're pulling all the other riders. Now, remember,
whole team, there's like four of them.
Yeah, Jonas is not in the previous stages, his lead was being chipped away at in second place by Remco, Ayuso, Del Toro, you know.
Pidcock had a huge
breakaway stage where he put a bunch of time in on, and then he lost a bunch of time the next day.
Yeah, so, Phil called him Tim Pidcock. His name is Tom.
Yeah,
imagine. Come on, Phil.
Yeah, even I can get that one.
I know. Come on, Phil. He's your countryman.
Yeah, we'll talk. I think we'll probably have after this, we may have a whole podcast about how Phil Liggett should retire.
And I held out for a long time,
but yeah, he's pulling a Biden, all right. So, you know, we're deep into the stage. Visma has been basically pulling, not Visma, yeah, Visma has basically been pulling all of Jonas's competitors. And we're like, why are they doing that? Obviously, they believed in Jonas that day. Jonas is going to make a big move. Well, it was a big move that we never got to see, because right at the base of the final climb, this is a climb they had never done before on the tour. So there is some speculation that there was some paying off by the town mayor, whatever they call him in France, that they should have this stage go through his town.
Even though
it was a bunch of, like, road traffic and not road traffic, road.
There was a lot of road furniture.
Yeah, because that's the word.
Yeah, because, you know, there was a breakaway in the stage, and the person who was in that solo lead, remember that curve? He had to jump over some, like, road furniture that was, like, the median divider or whatever.
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah,
he had to bounce over that, and we were getting nervous, and it was just around there where...
We should also say that this is the second day in the row that our Captain America, Quinn Simmons, perhaps our maybe could be alt cyclist, Quinn Simmons. I mean, the last episode we talked about that, and we did have a bunch of messages saying that he is an alt cyclist.
Okay, well, we had one person who said who had a perspective that I was
we're gonna leave this. Yeah, I've got no perspective, but he's
I'm not gonna say.
I mean, true to my whatever, regardless of his politics, he is one of the most exciting racers to watch, because not only the previous day he was lighting it up out front, but this day too, if you remember.
Yeah.
Like, huge effort. He's not a mountain climber, yet he made it very far up this climb.
If
it wasn't for the big guns really putting in those moves, mm-hmm. you know.
The boy's trying out
there. He's trying. It's pretty incredible. He's getting he's the most aggressive rider, I think, 2 days in a row on that. His parents are there. I saw this awesome, I'm on a tangent here, but the stage before when he was out front, his dad gave him like a high five, like from the crowd.
It went viral.
I saw that live and I thought that was so cool. I mean, imagine being a cyclist yourself and raising because Quinn Simmons' brother is also a professional cyclist, but raising a kid
Then
like seeing them race the Tour de France and be able to high five them from the side of the road while they're leading the Tour de France, like in the front of the pack.
In the Stars and Bars.
In a breakaway. Yeah. Like, that is beyond my comprehension of coolness. Like, I would. Hopefully one of our nephews, I wouldn't wish being a professional cyclist on anyone that I love, but anyway. So Jonas is coming down with his team about to have his Phoenix moment, and Campenaerts is leading it out. The lead moto kind of takes a weird line through. Campenaerts follows. There's like kind of like a pinch point. They kind of hesitate for a moment, and Jonas is in the back of the pack because his team is leading him. And there's an accordion effect where if the people in front put their brakes on and have to do a maneuver, it just kind of flows to the back. And as it turns out, couldn't quite fully see it because there was a tree in the way. But Jonas,
even with all the angles and stuff, it just looked like he lost the wheel and
lost control of his bike momentarily. Goes down and
right into the curve of
right into a curb.
Yeah. And he looked,
it was really sad. It took out Del Toro and a few others also, but they were able to get back on their bikes.
But they got up and was riding.
But Jonas, second place in the Tour, currently second in the GC. Jonas,
it's
almost
like 4 minutes and change behind Todd.
Right. Almost immediately we see him, wincing, like in pain, getting into the ambulance.
Uh-huh.
And he looks up at the sky for a brief moment, as he's wincing. And that was the moment where that really hit me.
Yeah.
That you spend your entire year preparing for this race. 21 stage race. And you live in an island of elevation. You can't come
away from everyone you
away
love.
Away from everyone you love. You can't come down and like say hi, because then you lose your elevation training.
It's a monastic practice.
You weigh all your food.
Yeah.
Not just you, but your whole team that's supporting you. So mm-hmm. you have the weight of your team on the shoulders, the weight of the sponsors on your shoulders,
on
your
those
own
tiny
expectations.
Shoulders.
And you're nothing, you're nothing more than just a 130 pound
hero boy.
Just, you become so fragile, and just to have cycling such a cruel sport, to have that this could happen to anybody, mm-hmm. This could happen to Tade, but he has like this uncanny ability to not get injured from crashes or avoid them altogether.
I say it's blood magic.
Blood magic. Because you think his mom is a witch.
Yeah.
Old world witch.
And I mean that in a really good way.
Mm-hmm.
I have respect for the dog aughts.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
so after this, you want to talk about Remco. Remco goes, we'll move this along. Remco ends up, all of a sudden Jonas is gone. It's like a free for all for second place.
There was a lot of chatter, like, because another UAE rider went down along with Isak. And when they got back up, they were riding up, kind of chatting with themselves. They've obviously reached Tade, and then they relay the news like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, Jonas has gone down. And then over the team radio, everyone hears like, okay, Jonas is in the ambulance. He's not coming back. And so the game really turns on, because this has always been a race for second place,
right,
with Todd being in the form he is. So then third place and fourth place, which is Remco and one and Isak, like, they are all going to be trying now for second place. And I liked at the end, Remco really throws it in and he wins that stage with Tade right next to him. They finish at the same time. And it was obviously Tade could have taken that stage, I think.
It was another
gift. But out of respect for what had just happened to his friend, and he calls him his friend, because Jonas has always been extremely respectful of Tade when he's fallen. He'll like wait up and stuff. I really like the respect and the friendship that they have at that high level. So then Remco takes the stage, and we are very much looking forward to what happens next, because yesterday they had a race, a rest day after that crash. And today is an individual time trial, which Remco does really well in. He is the rainbow jersey holder for the time trial. So
he's the best time trialist out there.
He's gonna step it up.
None of us thought Remco was gonna be able to make it up these mountains. So that's a big.
He did it.
He did it. You know, Florian Lipowitz, who was third in the Tour de France last year, I think we all expected him to really outshine Remco and put him in his place.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. And we should also note that this stage was also supposed to be another gift to Del Toro. The reason why Tade aside from the sympathy for Jonas, Tade was leading Del Toro was pushing Del Toro. He kept on calling it Del Toro's mountain. And this is your mountain, Isaac. And so, but Del Toro just didn't have it at the end.
Good captain. And, you know, he crashed and.
Yeah, he had crashed. He didn't have it at the end, and Remco outsprinted him. And Tade didn't even, he says he contested for it. Tade could have won that stage, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so you know, big changes. So you know, we're speculating, just like what happened in the women's Giro, about when they kicked out, at least when they kicked out Wiebes in the first stage,
Lorena.
That there was a that there was maybe some
the Italian mafia was there.
Maybe the doping thing in the middle of the night was
mafia.
Like wake them up. You know, Paul Sexas has got to shine here. You know,
yeah, because we haven't had a French winner yet.
So I think they knew that Sexas wasn't going to beat Tade, but they wanted him to, you know, do a little bit better. So maybe this like doping control in the middle of the night, just to wake up Jonas, was like an edge.
That's
to
the
get,
mob.
Was
the
edge
French
to get
mob
Sexas
showed up
into second place?
Give us your urine.
So speculations. Tune in. The tour is going to get, I think this next week of the tour in the high mountains is going to be awesome. Remco is in great form.
Let's wrap it up here. We've talked about this enough, but it was really exciting and it's big news. Mm-hmm. So worth talking about.
Mm-hmm.
As far as leading up to the women's tour, someone to watch out for is Zoe Backstead, child of Magnus Backstead, and another person we love watching in cyclocross as well.
Yeah.
She's super strong, had injury and sickness last year, but she's come back really, really strong. She just won the overall GC for the Belois Ladies Tour, which is like up in Belgium and the Netterish lands. That's really exciting because she is a teammate of Kasia's, and
I think this is obviously a tune-up for the tour.
I mean, not all the superstars were there, but just,
so showing good form. And when does the women's tour start?
Early August.
So it's going to be exciting.
We've got a little time. That's it for the race stuff. Rana, you want to talk about the Kana?
Rana, talk about the Kona.
Kona Unity,
folks,
that mixed wheel expedition bike got the built-in front rack and a bellied down tube.
big alt bike release. This past week, the Kona Unity, a play on words, the Kona Unit. I'm sure many of you know about that bike. That's kind of like been their hardtail. That's been in their lineup for a long time. So, the Kona Unity, at first glance, time for Jant to toot his horn here.
Toot, please toot away. Let me build this up for you.
Okay.
In 2017, Ron and I do the Baja Divide major send off. That tour requires.
That was 2016, wasn't it?
That was 2017,
okay.
January.
All right.
That requires plus tires. That means 3 inches or wider.
Right.
That's just what the trail
needs. It's a big deal at the time, plus tires.
Of you.
That was real popular. That was the 32-inch of the time were plus tires.
It is. So at that time, 2017, let me tell you, Ronnie is getting these ideas about bike that can suit something like this and riding in the desert.
An expedition bike.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
that can hold a lot of water, essentially, without making the bike handle all funny. He lovingly called it the swamp thing. Darren built one out for you. Mm-hmm. And you were riding this thing around in the desert starting in 2018 and into 19. In 2019, there's a Radovis article about it, and it's called Ultra Romance's Warthog. John called it the Warthog Wash Wiper Dirt Tourer. Say that really fast three times.
Warthog Wash Wiper Dirt Tourer. That's okay. Pretty good.
And that was in 2019. I'm telling you, if you look at the photos, it looks, I mean, minus the bellied thing, the down tube belly, it's the Geo looks very, very similar. Ron was able to squeeze a fat tire up there. That's a 5-incher, ladies. If you can hear me, it's 5 inches thick.
Thick,
and
not long.
That's thick. So that was up there, and then plus tire, just a 3-incher in the back. So set up like that kind of a mullet. And then today we have the Kona Unity.
Unity.
I was like, I almost called it the
UNITY.
As one stint together, Unity. Evolution's got to come. Okay, so this is also set up like a mullet.
As in, it's got a 700C or 29er front and a 27.5 rear.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't quite know why they mix sizes. Maybe for more bag clearance in the rear. I didn't read into it.
No say.
But it's I know this bike works because I've ridden it in my interpretation. It's got very similar geometry, mainly being, you know, when we built the swamp
the
thing,
chart.
Warthog Wash Wiper, it was based around geometry for the Geometron. Nikolai, Finnish brand, made the Geometron, which was the first.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. I mean, I took a lot from, yeah, I love those futuristic words like that. Mm. So the Geometron was a full suspension, like aggressive free ride enduro bike or whatever. And my friend Brendan was all about it in Durango. And he was like, we were really pushing the edge of what mountain bike geometry would be. So all the other big brands had pretty standard, like what the geometry had been since the early aughts, really not much changing. And so this big talk about progressive geometry in mountain biking was coming out. And I was fascinated by it because as we've talked about, I don't know if I talked about it on this pod, but with my own bike design, I love how geometry can modernize a bike without making it look, you know, like what we associate with modern bikes.
Mm.
So, you know, you could do it under the hood, just improvements under the hood. And so you lengthen the top tube, steeper seat tube angle, slacker head tube angle. So this Kona Unity has got the same thing. It's got a 75-degree seat tube angle, 65-degree head tube angle, and with a huge triangle. And that huge triangle, you could fit all your water in there. I had a custom frame, Connor, I can't remember his last name, Connor Oberst. In Tucson at the time, he was a young guy and he was making these giant water bladders. So he made me a custom water bladder that fit in that triangle and it was 12 liters. I could fit 12 liters of water.
Oh, I remember.
You remember that? 12 liters of water in my triangle.
Oh, yeah. I remember that bag for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember Connor because he was the first one, side note, who on a camping trip brought eggs and made eggs for breakfast. Ah, like brought
an advanced
little
guy.
Egg crackers.
He was like 21.
He was like 21
old.
Or 22 at the time.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
an advanced guy. Tucson,
bring
born
eggs
raised
to
in
crack.
Tucson. I think he lives in Durango now.
I
saw him there last year when I was on my birthday ride. He was like across the street, and I was like, "Holy shit, hey Connor!" And then we dipped into trails. Didn't have time. Anyway, so cool bike, expedition based, which is really cool. They've also got a built-in front rack, which I didn't have that on.
It looks
super
beefy.
Stable, looks beefy. I would say, you know, knowing these like expedition type bikes, you could take these things anywhere and everywhere. It's not going to be something you're going to want to ride around unloaded. So it's really only for trips. Big trips. It's not something that you're just going to be like, you know what? I'm going out for a little ride. Going to take my big old Warthog Unity bike. And, but
truly
as far
an expedition
as
bike.
Far as like an expedition by taking, like, you know, without racks, well, you have your built-in rack, taking everything out there and having it not adversely affect the handling of the bike. That bike, when I was out on trails, I did a multi-day trip in the San Juans, and I think we were out for 6 days, and I didn't even like top up on water. Just for fun. I was just like, how much water can I bring out here?
That's cool.
And you just don't feel it. You have so much traction because of all of the weight in there. But it's, make sure you get a low gear, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, you've definitely got the pie dish in the back there because you can
gear.
Fit it. And it just, this is the kind of bike that animates for me all kinds of like backcountry riding. Some of my favorite stuff is when you're really out there and it feels like you are really out there in the wild and you still have everything you need on your bike for days and days. Like, that is such a good feeling, am I right? Even though it's a heavy bike day, but it just animates so much adventure for me. Is that same
I
deal
see.
For you?
You look at it.
Like,
it's
we're
cool.
already thinking about all the big trips that we've done.
I mean, this
it's
is
really
not
kind of cool.
It's not going to be a bike Super that cool. you use much. But the times that you use it, you're going to love it.
It's a tour specific, you want to disappear.
I'm all about like narrow use case scenarios for bikes.
I love it.
Because that helps you really build out your stable, you know, if you've got the room. And, you know, I like building bikes like specific for certain like trail networks and things around here. And this is something that really plays into that. The expedition bike, I think everyone's
really
got to,
cool.
even if you only use it once, it's going to be life changing. Not the bike ride, but the actual
shit
that you get into out there.
Exactly. Yeah, opens up a lot more variety out there on what you can do on a bike.
What you can comfortably do on a bike.
Yeah.
And have fun.
Yeah.
Doing.
So cool.
Up on you, Kona. Nice.
Yep.
So you could check it out on all of the websites right now.
Rana is done on Kona.
Rana is done on Kona, folks. Okay. What do we got?
And good job designing this bike in 2018, 2017.
Thank you. I knew I was on to something. I didn't have quite the, I remember releasing that or soft releasing it and getting emails from Bike Radar, Cycling News, and like a few other outlets and being so confused, but they were like really into
what are you doing, man?
Yeah.
They're
like, oh, he's doing bikes. I was like, no, I don't know what I'm doing, but
I guess that was the first bike that you
that I had the I was like designed. Okay, we might do it. Oh yeah, Danny and Carla.
Oh yeah,
I made one for him.
That's
we
right.
Made one for him, and I think he's still riding it.
Yeah,
but that was our sponsored athlete at the time.
That's right, Perdido in BT
because we were already moving out of being on the road full time, and I was like, well, we got to pay someone else to be out, or not pay, but make. I wanted to have a team rider, kind of how Matt from Crust had done with the Romancer for me.
Yeah,
and so I was like, okay, and so Danny did some awesome rides on that. We did the Camino Diablo with him on that.
That's right.
In the deep sand.
Yeah, it worked great.
So, you know, cool stuff.
That's when I met Samantha.
Yes. So, let's put a bow on that and move on to Storm of the Century with Aria.
Finger God.
you did. I want to just say, I think
promises were made.
Promises were kept. So out of your,
all right, listeners,
800 miles that you've logged in this year, and an eighth of that
done in one day.
Yeah. Recently.
So it wasn't a century proper. I was shy five.
Mm-hmm. I think that's cooler.
You think so?
Uh huh. Yeah.
I mean, I was shy 4.16.
I always like to do, like, if it's going to be a century, I'll keep it at 99.
Just
love,
like, edging.
Just to be like, it's like such a flex. You're like, centuries don't mean anything to me. 99.
Oh,
it's on a ride.
Well, I'm not that way. Yeah. I do love going triple digits. But I'm also very okay with 95. I had a great day. I took my road bike out and mostly stuck to roads, although I hit some gravel because I must if I want to enjoy myself. It can't just
paint a picture. What bike are you on?
I'm on the Cannondale pre-CAD CAD bike. Mm-hmm. It's red.
A road bike.
It's a road bike. I already said it's a road bike. Great, great little fast car. It's red, the color of speed. And it weighs, I think, like 19 pounds.
Tell us about the top. What kind of tires have we got? What do we got? We got some. I mean, we got what we got the fattest tire we could fit in there, which is a 30.
Which is a 30, mm-hmm. and it's not a size that Ultra Dynamico made, sadly.
Yeah. So they, your average speed would be quite a bit higher. If
it would be a lot higher, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I was riding on race casing Ultra Dynamico, best in the industry. What are on there? What tires are on there?
Are challenge.
Right.
What's it? Paris-Roubaix, something. So there's a slight amount of protection on it. But I do, you know, challenged. Those tires have lasted quite a bit.
Yeah,
but they're not vulcanized. Like, so it's kind of made in the old style. So unfortunately, like the edges do kind of come unlaminated, unglued.
But it's
starting to happen. Yeah,
for the Cannondale. But mm-hmm. You know, this is my fake team bike because everyone in Nutmeg Country team
are obsessed with red.
Is obsessed with red, and they all have
it's the fastest color.
Darren. ZR1s built mm-hmm. up for them in the team colors. So I have a fake one.
Which we will be pre-ordering in probably next week, folks.
Oh, okay.
Yep. ZR1 by Ron's Bikes, Country Road, mid-reach road bike. You can fit 33s or 38s. Those are the two things that Ultra Dynamica offers. So,
okay.
Or if you want 30s, I won't say no.
Yeah. I would love a 33. Put me on the list.
Yeah, yeah.
If possible. But yeah, beautiful ride. It's riding roads. I used to ride all the time when I was doing my centuries with the full moon regularly. It was just a beautiful day out. It was like the first really nice day that we had pretty much all week because we had all of the smoke from the wildfires in Canada and up north in the Upper Peninsula there. Coming down and just wreaking havoc. Like it looked like the sky.
It reeked.
It smelled, but it also just made the sun look like the moon. My nephew was like, look at the moon in the middle of the day. I was like, that's the sun, you dummy. God,
so dumb.
Learn.
Like
You're
five,
6 years old.
Six.
You should know.
Oh, you should know that by now.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and then there was all that rain on Saturday when we normally our big...
We had 6 inches of rain
Saturday.
So it was
like a storm, and I saw a lot of trees down on my ride. I love seeing what, you know, nature has wrought to these lands after a big storm day like that. So I just wanted to be on my bike all day. It was going to be like 70 and kind of peekaboo sun, and I just had a great solo day. You know, I also needed that day to process through some stuff. You know, on these centuries, there's always tears for fears. And yeah, just love it for all kinds of mental and physical upkeep. And I was pretty fast. No, I think my fastest century I've ever done mm-hmm. was at Mid-South a bunch of years ago with you and Patrick. Like everybody was there. And I did like 105 in 13 miles.
Really? Average. You averaged 13 miles
an hour? I did. I checked my activities.
What was the elevation gain on
that? It wasn't much.
Okay.
It was, I think I want to say like 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. And the one that I just did, 95 with 5,737, completed in 7:56, 7 mm-hmm. hours, 56 minutes. So I averaged 12, which is very good for me, just like right off the
like
bat
we
here.
Said, only 700 miles in the legs this year prior to that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was very impressed.
Thank you. I just think you're
so cool that you, when I was on a ride with the guys, and they're like, where's Aria today? And I was like, extreme Aria, out doing a century.
Yeah, the pendulum has swung to the extreme side.
It's the extreme side. And they're like, wow. And I was like, it's pretty fucking cool that my sweetheart is capable of so much and can perform at this level, just like, you know, when you set your mind to it and you do it. I guess there's something about, what is that about these century rides that makes them so doable for you?
I think it's just being outside all day.
And so like, you have, but you're not necessarily like an outside all day type of person though.
Yeah, I could not, but I think for my type of mind, there's like so many decisions you have to make in a day.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to eat? What are you going to do in this hour and that hour? What are the tasks? Like, all of that melts away and you just become laser focused on like, I've got my food in my bag. I've got the route downloaded. Like, for 10 hours, I am doing this singular thing that is moving my body through space like the best I can. And the decision making fatigue goes away. Like, all of the daily stuff kind of melts away and you're just like in it. You're in the moment and you can kind of like check out almost of your day to day and like the drudgery of every day, like dishes and deciding on dinner and all this stuff goes away and you can just be. And I think that's the thing about centuries that I love so much is just a whole day to yourself to just be out there and deal with whatever comes up. And I'm really proud of myself for this specific one because I kept my breaks really short. Like all the past centuries I've done, they have always been, I'm out there for like 12 hours. I was only out there for 9.5 hours. And it was very intentional of like taking breaks whenever I wanted, but I just didn't linger too long.
Yeah, I was shocked with how quickly you got that done.
Yeah. I didn't linger too long. And while I was riding, I was very conscious of like keeping my pace and my speed up. So I was kind of locked in and really enjoyed myself. Like the self-talk I had in my head was like, you are going to do this in sub 8 hours. And I know you can do it. Like if you want to quit, you can quit later. Like quitting comes very easily in my head. So I don't need to work on thinking that I could quit anytime because that's always available to me. But what I was thinking was like, of course you can do this in sub 8. Like you got it in your legs. And then I did.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to bring back full moon centuries because I need it.
I think that's your aptitude. You know, these long rides are definitely your aptitude.
Yeah. I feel really good.
Now that you're getting speedier at them, you could even go longer. That's like the cool thing about, you know, doing a century, I feel like just about anyone who's listening to this, you could do a century. Like you could do it. It's just a matter of doing it. You know, if you keep eating, Sarah Swallow told me this once. I really liked the only thing you like on a bike tour, you could go as long as you want. You just keep eating. That's all it takes. You just got to keep on giving the body fuel that it likes and not like making your stomach sick. But, you know, if you keep on giving your body calories, you'd be amazed with what it can do.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as you get faster with it, you could start doing like 150. You could do 200. You could start doing these randonneuring rides. And
Samantha and I talked on the phone yesterday and we did bring up QBP. Paris Brest Paris again, because that's just like something. There's more exciting races for sure, but because it's so historic, the first one, and there's a structure to it that like brings in group efforts and like gearing up for it. It's in 2027. I don't know. I keep flirting with it. I don't know.
I could see you liking that. Yeah, me personally.
Hell to the no.
I don't ever want to be on my bike for that long. Like that. Like
I do.
Yeah, and you do. We have these different.
Yeah.
I'm always afraid of. Yeah, I'm the more. I have the moderate approach. You have the extreme approach.
Yeah. That's why I'm the extremist, and Ronnie's the moderate.
Mm-hmm.
In politics as well.
So that wraps up the storm of the century, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Mm-hmm. I'm really proud of you for getting out there and doing that. That was really cool.
Thank you. I hadn't done ride that long since the Tour Divide 2023.
Wow. Yeah. Is that real?
Yeah, that's real. I had not done a century.
She's back.
Or anywhere close.
She's back.
Since then. And it feels really good, I must say.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm curious to when we get to talk about this next one, hopefully just next a month away. Oh, full moon is actually coming up. It's half full right now.
I'm such a sicko right now for it because I like want to ride every day now.
Yeah.
Because you know how it's kind of addictive. Like I felt really good.
I know.
Yeah. Yesterday I went for like a 10-mile recovery ride and I was just like singing and had a great time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when
I think I might do it every week.
When the legs feel good.
Yeah, the legs are, you know, they're good, you know, so yeah.
All right, well.
Should we bring out the local pervert?
Yeah, that's right. We have a local pervert to bring out. So I'm going to put this on a quick pause. I'm going to go upstairs and extract Alex from our bathroom. I don't know if you could call it a bathroom right now. There's nothing in there. Yeah, I don't know if you could
really
call it a bathroom
it,
before
folks.
That
I'll,
either, though.
I'll post photos.
Yeah, before and after photos, folks, like we were saying, we were basically just popping a squat in a hole in the floor. Not basically. It was a dark hole.
Ask our friends.
Yeah, we had
Maybe we should get MJ on the show.
Yeah.
Ron's mom,
my mom
to talk
was
about
horrified,
how horrendous,
horrified by our bathroom for years.
She bit her tongue, though. She's done a good job.
All right. Well, let's go find Alex.
Let's get Alex our savior.
Oh, boy. Live, local, and late breaking. We've got. You want to do your full name? We've already said it.
Yeah, you already said it. Go for it.
Alexander Dyson, ooh, local pervert and roof salesman now.
Yeah.
And runner-up for best in show.
Runner-up for best in show at the Nor'easter.
Mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
And harbinger of the word of the term bricked up.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for that. Alex.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm happy to hear it getting used.
Are you bricked up right now?
We're getting there.
It's a
big moment. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So only the second guest, this is the first live guest. I guess Taylor was a live guest, but the first like in-person guest.
Yeah.
I know,
what
a fall from grace. It's gone from Taylor Finney to local
IRL.
Pervert.
And I should say that we refer to you as the local pervert because of how like the cold sweats that you were having at the Nor'easter last year while you were entering your CR1 team road bike into the competition for best in show.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, when you were faced with a Brian Chapman's
the Bianchi
that he had read. Oh,
I remember. Yeah, I think about it every day. Every morning I wake up.
Everything. It was your size and you did not get it, but you were coming at me. Your eyes were so glazed over.
I remember the eyes.
The eyes were, and I was like, I didn't.
They were
I was
crazed.
I'm going to say that that was the moment when you really endeared yourself to me
as local pervert.
As local pervert, because I was like, this guy has it harder than any of us. Like
that was that was one of the best bikes on site that day.
I mean, I was so impressed by how just completely pie eyed you were about this bike, and asking everyone, should I get it? And I was like, wow, this is something else. So
it was the eyes of a jungle cat as it's about to pounce on its prey. You know how they get all big and like
a jungle cat.
They get low and they're about to lunge.
I implore your listeners to go and look up the bike I'm talking about because it is a beautiful, beautiful bike. It was a it was a trashed Bianchi that Brian Chapman got his hands on, totally refinished. I think he like took out some dents, repainted it, just this like lusty silver.
Handmade
the brakes.
That alone.
And oh my God, trying those brakes, it's like, you know, you grab them at first and you're like, that's a little soft, but like, no, you keep going.
Oh, it's progressive.
It's perfectly modulated.
Yeah. Mm. You're saying all the words I love. So let's start. We already said your name.
Yes.
Where'd you grow up?
West Hartford, Connecticut.
Hey.
With a hint of the Philadelphia area.
Hint of the Philadelphia area?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
From
like
ages...
cream cheese?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, from ages 8 to 13, I was outside of the...
Oh.
Outside of Philly, outside in the suburbs.
So then, but 13 and beyond, you're back in Hartford.
Yes.
West Hartford.
Let's be clear.
West Hartford.
Although I lived in Hartford a lot in my adult years.
Yep. Okay. And I could see a Zen in your lip right now.
Oh,
I
yeah.
So this is also our Zen master.
Yes. Bringing the edge to Nutmeg Country.
Bringing the edge to Nutmeg Country.
Call him
what's
Howard.
What's your age,
zinning.
If you don't mind me asking?
33, 34, next week.
Okay. And
oh.
Same as you. You're turning 21 next week,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just about.
Yeah.
That's right. We do.
He's barely legal.
We don't share a birthday, but it's one day apart, right?
Yeah.
So a fellow Leo here, folks, and it is our season. We are roaring.
Indeed.
You roar with me just off to the side of the mic.
Roar.
Okay. Well.
And shout out fellow Leo Joe Cruz.
Yeah. Yep. Joe Cruz. Shout out.
Oh, he was in my dream last
night
too.
And Brian Walsh.
We got a lot of Leos
of
right
Leos.
Around. Yeah. Okay. So in our own crew here.
Yeah.
So when you were growing up, what was your, you know, like what were you into? I want to lead. We're going to tie this into what got you into curated bikes. So use that context, please.
Yeah, I'd say as a teenager is mostly skateboards and marijuana.
Okay, solid. Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 17, I got a 1982 or 83 Puke Odyssey.
Okay.
That I immediately stripped down and got a fixed gear rear wheel for.
So what year is this?
This was 2009.
Okay.
So the height of fixie culture.
Still pretty, you know, you are advanced because that's still, you know, you're still within the restraints of, you know, it hadn't quite jumped the shark yet, the fixed gear movement. Maybe it had, but you're
2009?
You're still there. You're still there. You know, if you go beyond, if you're getting into fixed gears beyond 2010, mm-hmm. then you're probably delivering for Jimmy John's.
So at this time, yeah. What got me into it was my friend Paul showed me.
Want to shout out Paul?
Paul Pilipician, my childhood friend.
Oh,
who
that's we've been, how you say it.
Yeah.
Pilipician. Okay.
We've been getting him deep into the alt bikes lately. So we grew up skateboarding and riding bikes together. And I remember we stumbled across the Macaframa video. If you remember the Macaframa guys, they were a fixed gear team, club, cult out in San Francisco.
Oh, but different than MASH?
Different than MASH.
Is this like alt MASH?
Post
MASH? I'd say maybe probably around the same genesis. I don't really know MASH's timeline.
Oh, yeah.
But this was just like a club.
Okay.
And they put out just a cool long form video that was, you know, it's just them like throwing big skids down these, you know, San Francisco hills. And, you know, you get like early fixed gear freestyle, but they're doing it on like Bianchis with aero spokes.
I could picture it. I'm throwing up a little bit in my mouth, but I could picture it. You know.
Keep it down, Ron.
So that got fixed gear on my radar, which made me want to build one up. And you know, I wouldn't say I was a bike builder at that time, but
you had an eye for curation.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Speak. So leading into what you're into now, when did you start getting into more ATB Reddit subreddit style builds?
Yeah.
We should preface this all by saying you're a big deal on Reddit.
I'm a medium deal.
Medium deal?
Yeah. On like one subreddit on X-Biking.
X-Biking.
Yeah.
Describe to us X-Biking Reddit.
X-Biking, it's, you know, you take... It's basically take a vintage 26er, you know, throw some bars with some rise on there, slap together a bunch of old components, some new components. I don't know. I feel like your like classic resto mod 26er aesthetic.
Okay. All right.
You know, bags, racks.
Would you say that was your inception into the modern alt bike world?
No,
for the wind here. Hold on, let's let this breeze pass just in case it gets a little noisy.
I think my modern inception was I kind of wanted to get into gravel and I was following Tony Krupicka already just from his climbing and his trail running, which I was doing both of. And he was on the Crust team with you. And so I was seeing his aesthetic of like the Crust bikes with, you know, like the deep profile, you know, he'd have Zips, Envies, Hunts, and just kind of that like Restomod aesthetic.
Yes, that's right. I think that's really cool to have that connection. But you're also an ultra runner yourself.
Yeah, formerly.
Leadville 100 finisher right here.
Yeah, yes.
He has a buckle.
I got the buckle. I got the big buckle.
You're so good about your accolades. Also a finisher of the Appalachian Trail.
Oh, yeah, correct.
Southbound.
2020 southbound.
Classic style.
No, the classic style would be northbound.
Okay.
I go against the grain.
He goes against
the grain. Yeah, no, I mean like in purist, continuous style.
Purist.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to bring.
He's pure.
He's got a certain level of purity.
You're a Connecticut boy.
Yes.
Pedigree.
So what was your first alt build?
My first alt build? Well, my first build was that bomb track that I kind of just built up. Like,
I don't know.
It was big bike spec'd, you know, it was very capable, you know,
that was
650 by 50. Okay. I built it up. At this point, I figured out that you lived 30 minutes away and then you were promoting the Spring Fling, and that was my first what I thought was a gravel ride.
Oh, you thought that was a gravel
ride? I thought that was a gravel ride. It's not a gravel ride, folks.
Pure ATB.
Pure ATB on a drop bar bike.
Yeah. So, 50s, that's pretty good.
Yeah, 50s. I got through it.
So that was that build, and I remember going on a few, that was when we started inviting you on some, because you were obviously an endurance guy. So
yes,
I knew you
real
could,
sicko.
I knew, you're real sicko. I knew you could get out. I knew you could get down with these longer rides with us.
Yeah.
And but you were on that bomb track. You had some pretty wide bars on it too.
Had some cow chipper 50s.
Yeah.
Too wide. Good shape.
Yeah. Yeah. And
honestly, when I was first seeing you come for rides, I thought you were a roadie.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, my bad. I meant that as an insult.
I took it as a compliment.
That's great.
Well, he was performance.
Not an
insult. He was optimized.
You know yeah.
He was optimized. He still is with
like,
the Zen.
Whoa, you know,
this, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This guy is Zen packed. Man.
PEDs right there.
Yeah. So,
okay,
yeah,
sorry,
go
on.
So we did some pretty long rides together up near your way.
Yes.
But it really, you know, for me, it wasn't really until you started to put together your team bike, your CR1 team bike, that I was like, where is this guy getting this stuff? Like, so tell us about your descent into madness.
Well, I'd say, okay, so my first alt bike, after the bomb track, I really wanted a 26er.
Okay.
So I started with somebody's already mostly built Antelope Trek 830.
Okay.
And it was, you know, like Nitto riser bars, Dior 1x10, those like Maxxis dirt jumper, you know, with like the peanut butter sidewalls. And it was a good start. And then from there, just kind of slipped into madness. I remember I ordered ortho bars for that bike. And then at the same time, I stumbled across an M2 Stumpy on eBay. And I don't know if you remember, I texted you and was just like, hey, man, like if I get both these things, I'm basically just recreating your M2. Is that cool? And you're like, haha, go for it.
I love seeing those bikes recreated. I love seeing people's like personal takes on them. And because there's always something a little different.
Just last week, there was a beautiful one that was ortho bar M2 Stumpy, same one I have. And the guy messaged me and was just like, hey, I just wanted to reach out. Like I saw yours on X Biking and this is like a total ripoff of yours. And by proxy, Ronnie's.
That's cool. Yeah, so, I love that.
That was really cool.
So tell us about your favorite bike right now. How many bikes do you have? So I want to start this over.
Try again. Yep.
How many bikes did you have when you first built up that bomb track? So your inception into madness.
That was my third. I had.
So did you have three bikes in the stable at that point?
Yes.
And what were they?
I had my Bianchi Pista Concept fixed gear.
Okay.
Pure like late 2000s aesthetic fixed gear.
Okay. You were delivering Jimmy John's on that.
I was delivering Jimmy John's on that. Okay. Correct. And then I had a 1983 Pook Odyssey. Not the one I turned into a fixed gear because that got stolen in Boulder when I was a kid. It was just another one my dad got at a garage sale and was like, same bike, you want it? And I was like, $100, why not? Rode that thing probably twice.
Okay.
That's still in my dad's garage. And then the bomb track.
Okay, so three bikes.
Yeah.
Okay, how many years ago was that?
Four.
4 years ago.
Yes.
Okay.
Where are you going with this?
Let's go 4 years later. Describe to us your stable right now.
Do you want me to just go through them one by one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want the best one last.
The best one last. Yeah. Well, the best one is almost built, and we're waiting on that derailleur. And
you could get into it a little. I think we'll build a preview.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your worst one right now?
It's
got to be rideable.
You don't hate any of your kids, but I'd say I have a Klein built up as a single speed right now.
Ooh, and that's Klein.
It's beautiful, but we're just not in a good single speed area, as you've mentioned.
Well,
you know, it's you've either got the wrong gearing to get there or you've got the wrong gearing for when you're there.
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't get ridden much.
We like to ride in alt cycling. I think a hallmark of alt cycling is riding your bike to the trailhead.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's a big... You know, that's a big deal.
And also when you live in the third smallest state in the union, you have no excuse.
Fair enough. So that's the Klein Rascal, right?
1991 Klein Rascal.
Okay. All right. It's cool.
It's cool. Yeah.
Check, what's your Instagram handle?
At ALXDYSON.
I would check that out. He's got a lot of cool builds on there. Pretty good photographer too.
Hey, thanks.
So, okay,
getting
let's
better.
Move on. What's next?
Every day.
All right, I'm ditching the worst to best premise because I love them all equally.
Okay, all right.
We've got the Bridgestone T700, 1987 Bridgestone T700.
Top bike, you just built that up.
Yeah, So that's like early. I mean, Grant Peterson had been at Bridgestone for a couple of years, but you can tell that's like full Grant Peterson DNA. Mm-hmm. You know, nice. Like the early ATB, or I guess ATB.
But
you know,
road bike?
Yeah, because like... it was spec'd in 1987 with 28s.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, he calls it a sport tourer. There's really nothing touring about it other than clearance. Mm-hmm. You know, mid-reach calipers, came spec'd with 28s, currently running Kava 33s.
You got a photo of that on your Instagram?
I do.
Check that out.
Check it out.
Okay, that one's hot.
That one's hot.
What do we got next?
Next, we've got the Stumpy, the M2 Stumpy.
Okay.
Ortho bars.
Okay.
The best bunny hopping bar.
Yeah,
out there.
That's true, folks.
Folks, you want some good bunny hoppers. The ortho bars are like picking up your groceries. It's just your bars are right next to you.
That's true. Mm.
Throw a dropper post on there, you'll get 10 feet high. And then we've got, what are the 26ers? Oh, I've got the MB1 I just finished up.
Oh, yeah. That's a hot one.
So 1991 Bridgestone MB1.
Yeah, Darren didn't make the fork. He just put in some...
Yeah, so
it's on it.
I got it with a period incorrect Judy. I swapped it out. I found the wrong paint color Richie Logic Unicrown fork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Darren added the mid-blade mounts because I was like, I'm taking it to powder, you know, jazz it up a little bit.
Right.
And got a pretty close powder match.
That's a good bike.
That's a good bike. So that one's dropper posted, 1x11 with modern White Industries cranks.
Okay.
White Industries hubs.
Nice.
Fun rig.
Yeah.
Is that all the 26ers? No. And then I've got Trek 930, 1994. That's got an Edson steel segmented fork. Uh-huh. That's the basket shredder.
Okay.
So now moving on to, we've got the team bike.
Okay.
Are people still listening? Yeah. Are you guys still listening?
We love this.
So
America loves this.
We've got the Ron's Bikes Larkin CR1 team color edition.
One of eight.
The Armadillo.
Yeah, one of eight team bikes.
So that's...
It's got a full super record 13.
Super record 12. Right. Rim brake mechanical.
The last of the rim brake mechanical record groups.
Probably the best rim brake mechanical group set that will ever be conceived.
I will say, I hopped on that the other day, and I was like blown away by how the shifting was very,
it's
very nice.
The clicks are fantastic. Yeah, good haptics.
Everything you love about Campy was denatured into that shifting experience. So that bike is hot as hell. You got pictures of that on your Instagram?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
You're going to have to check out his Instagram for all of these.
Yeah.
And then we've got the chisel.
The upcoming. So tell us what you've done with this.
So I bought the 2025 chisel full sus off of a buddy.
It's an aluminum full suspension cross-country bike by Specialized.
Yeah, so 130mm fork, 110mm shock in the rear.
Mm-hmm.
So XC Plus light downcountry. Good for New England.
And with the way that we talk on this podcast, with mountain biking being the lowest rung of cycling culture, you know, many would hear you talking about this bike and just be like, God, another one? You know, but what have you done to this? How have you made this your own?
I had a graphic designer make some decals to look like the Specialized branding is, and the Fox fork is that of the Fat Chances.
Mm-hmm.
I had it powder coated the like Fat Chance lavender, and I designed the whole thing. It's basically supposed to look like a 1991 Team Fat Chance Yo Eddie. I was referencing John Watson's personal one a lot. Yeah. So thank you, John Watson, for the excellent reference photos. So yeah, I put a 130mm Fox Factory fork on there, 34.
Mm-hmm.
Kashima dropper to match, carbon Envy bars.
Okay. Let's hear about the purple Anno that we got on here.
For purple Anno, we've got White Industries hubs. We've got purple Garbaruck to match.
Uh-huh.
We've got a purple Madrone derailleur coming any day now.
Mm-hmm, This bike is going to be fire.
It's, yeah.
Folks, Not up on the Instagram yet, but I'm thinking I want to take photos of this bike when it comes out because I've
probably this week.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we'll keep you updated on that. I'll maybe even send it into the Radvis, see if John wants to put it up.
Yeah. That'd be most excellent.
So, okay. I'm sure these are all going on your because you're a Reddit superstar.
I wouldn't go that far, but no. Yeah, I'll usually post them. I'll post
Reddit.
Yeah.
That's folks. Ultra Romance is the ultra romance of Reddit. He's not even on Reddit. He's the king of X biking, and he doesn't have an account.
That's why we keep him around here, folks.
All right. Leos love to compliment,
Leos. We're just like licking each other's fur, right?
Yeah.
Now.
Oh yeah.
All right. Now we want it, what everyone's thinking right now. Okay, I'm going to say it. Are you single? How can you deal with such a sick addiction of being such a depraved pervert and keep a relationship at the same time?
Because I have a girlfriend who is a special needs teacher and has a lot of patience for folks with ADHD.
That's the ticket.
That's the ticket.
Yeah.
I didn't realize she was a special needs teacher.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. An epiphany here. So, folks, if you're this much of a pervert, you better go find someone who
has the patience of a saint.
Yes. And is able to, you know, appreciate the eccentricities of the brain.
Yes. Lots of patience is required.
Wow. Okay. So she's all about the local pervert.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she is.
Well, I think
shout
that
out,
pretty
Sarah.
Much. I hope that a continuation of this series, I would like to have Sarah on just to ask her.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah, just to like say like, oh yeah, what do you think of all this? Because, you know, I think a lot of us are wondering how you balance cycling and relationships. And not only cycling, but the cycling when it becomes a lifestyle.
Oh, well, you throw out your receipts before she gets home.
Okay, so we're already.
But she would look at the receipts and be like, not another bike, Alex.
No, it's more, there was one time I had an invoice from, I ordered a Rivendell Marks rack off of Crust. And she's like, that thing was $160? I would have guessed it was $40. I was like, yeah, I got to start hiding those slips from now on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. If you're going to balk at that.
So,
price.
Yeah, so we won't bring that up with her.
Yeah, so we won't tell her how much Garbara cranks are.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm getting them at cost.
Yeah.
Yay. All right. Well,
I would love to have her on.
Yeah. We're going to have her on.
Just
at some point.
Just tell her all of this information.
Yeah, I'll give her fair warning.
What have you been hiding?
Yeah. I think a lot of us alt cyclists out there are wondering how you even get a girlfriend in the first place. Like, we're all wondering how we get our first girlfriends, you know, because we're such deep nerds.
This is hot Alex.
This is hot Alex, though, folks. You know, this is an exception. This is everyone's housewives fantasy. Have the construction man come over and unclog the toilet and come downstairs and be like, "Welp, I did that.
Laying pipe.
I'm laying pipe in here."
Which I will be doing later today at your house, by the way. Literal pipe laying, the metaphorical.
And last week when you had your hands all covered in our fecal matter after removing our toilet, Aria was feeding you cherries.
That was nice. That was very thoughtful. Thank you for that.
I got
all right,
consent.
Well, we're already an hour and 8 minutes into this podcast, and you have given us some serious content here. I think everyone's going to really...
Content.
You are...
I know.
Yeah, you are on it.
Megan Thee Stallion was wearing a shirt that said, "This is cunt" or something. So
this is
fresh
cunt.
It's fresh in the brain.
All right.
I'm bummed I missed Tour Talk. What did you guys talk about?
Well, you'll have to listen.
All right.
You'll have to listen like everyone else.
All right.
Hopefully if they fast-forwarded through that to this. I don't know. Folks, we are going to conclude this segment.
One more bike. I still have the.
Oh, geez, of course.
I have the Alumax.
Yeah. Oh, yes, of course. You have an That's right. For this bathroom, a work trade. We got I don't know if y'all saw the kind of like, what would you call that color? Butternut?
Curry.
Curry.
Mm.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Curry colored Alumax that Alex is going to be building up. Can't wait. I mean, honestly, you know, in our group, I love the way that Troy builds bikes. Troy and I have kind of been riffing off one another for years, though. So it's cool to have this influx of like new energy and how you seriously are talented in your vision for the builds.
Hey, thanks, Ron.
And so, and not only that, but you're also
you've been my biggest inspiration along the way.
You're a sponge for not only the culture, but for how to actually do, you build your own wheels, you do all the stuff. You're relatively new to cycling, yet you're able to do so much. Mm. And so I think that kind of leads into our next discussion on gatekeeping and cycling. Mm-hmm. You know,
Oh, there's also the country fixed.
Oh, you have another bite. You have the country fixed.
Yeah.
You are a complete pervert.
Yeah. You love that one. Yeah, I love that one.
You are. Oh, my God. You are disgusting.
Yeah, it's true.
That towel is stiff.
It's a minute 10. Do we even have time to get into gatekeeping and cycling?
Totally.
Okay.
Totally.
All right. Yeah. People like the long pods. So
yeah, I listen to podcasts.
Feel free to stick around if you want, or if you need to get back to work.
We're here right now.
It'll only be another 20 minutes or so, but maybe.
Yeah, I do have to work on your bathroom, yeah, I'm on my own clock, so fuck
That's
it.
Right.
All right, well, folks, gatekeeping and cycling. Is gatekeeping alt? Mm-hmm. That is kind of like what we're thinking here. Now, I'm going to pass it off to Aria because you've got some sociological expertise to lend to this.
Well, the Webster Dictionary defines gatekeeping as... Okay, but seriously, let's figure out what gatekeeping actually is, and then we could get into the meat and potatoes, because there was, or the tofu and potatoes, because there was a viral video, like Reel or something, that I saw, and you saw too. Maybe you saw as well. No, Sally saw it. Sal saw it too, and because I was talking to her about what it means. This person said, like, they used to ride bikes that were fast bikes and had to wear spandex, but all kind of ends up being a uniform too. And there's gatekeeping within, like, not party pacing, I guess. I'm doing a very bad job at synthesizing what this guy was saying, but basically that, like, it's the SLC punk take is punks end up looking like each other, and then they have to have the uniform to even be punk when the whole thing is you're trying not to fit in, or you're just doing your own thing. And use the word gatekeeping, which is what got us going on this. And I really like gatekeeping as a concept and theory, but I think because people know this word, they use it and without really thinking about it, because it's lexiconic. And gatekeeping refers to, like, restricting. This is the definition, right? It's controlling access, withholding information, limiting participation in an exclusive community. It could include policing, which is like enforcing strict unwritten rules, excluding, keeping individuals out of a group hobby or status by unilaterally imposing criteria. And last aspect is hoarding, which is like keeping secrets or valuable resources, like store locations or media, to oneself to maintain their exclusivity. And by these definitions, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't know how it is in cities. You know, I feel like we're a bit apart.
Good
because
point.
We live out
yeah.
in the country. But as mm-hmm. I've noted on this podcast before, we see another cyclist, especially if they're our age, in this area. It doesn't matter what they're on. We're chasing them down and inviting them to our rides. Mm-hmm. And if they can stand a group chat, an overactive group chat, then they'll, mm-hmm. which is mainly, you know, halfway focused on pizza, then they may mm-hmm. be able to, you know, meet up with one of our rides. But I don't think that we gatekeep at all. But at the same time, I'm not opposed to gatekeeping. Because I look at it as more as gatekeeping as culture building, whereas, you know, there are ways that you can, you know, using Alex as an example here, 4 years into his curated alt biking experience, mm-hmm. and he's
firmly in,
you know, I feel like to master something, it's got to be at least 10 years. I can't imagine how you're going to be in 10 years. Hopefully you're still here. I'm saying in bikes.
Yes. Yeah. No, I got that. Thank you.
I'm not saying that. Both, you know, but, you know, it's a matter of, like, the type of, you know, respect that you give the culture that's been built. And you can't give respect to a culture without knowing anything about it. And, you know, in the years before social media, you know, it was a, it, you had to really search for this stuff. You know, you had to really, you couldn't, you know, you either had to know some old head who knew way more than you did and had lived the bike life for decades, you know, or you had to go on Sheldon Brown's website and navigate the strange, the strangeness there, you know? And so it's like, so, you know, I think some older riders of my generation get a chip on their shoulder being like, well, who's this? You know? And like, I will admit, I was like, I gave you some runway, but it wasn't like I kept it in my head. I was like, who is this? Like, what are they trying to accomplish here? And like, you know, you could take a look at, cause I love to look at people's bikes and saddle sniff. Mm-hmm. It's judgmental, but it's separate. It's not gatekeeping. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I wasn't going to be like, hey, you can't come here. Oh, wait, man. Hey, man. That bag is wrong. What tires are these? You know, like, you know, I wasn't like, oh, Maxxis, you can't come.
Yeah, no, you were come along. You're quiet about it for a couple of years.
You know, I guess that would be the, like, you, I want to be as inclusive as possible when it comes to cycling, but you've got to also, first off, you got to be able to keep up with the ride. Cause mm-hmm. we, you know, it's, if there is a drop ride, you know, if there's a bunch of people on the ride, they don't want to be waiting around. And you know, we have a
which we rarely do drop rides.
Yeah, right, right.
That's, you know, usually just like our summer sicko.
Yeah, if
rides.
You have a real long day, you got to get the miles in. You don't want to be waiting up for someone. So, you know, there is gatekeeping that happens with that, whereas you just don't have time to wait.
That's like fitness level gatekeeping, which I think is different than cultural gatekeeping mm-hmm. when it comes to like costumes or, you know, rituals or objects of worship.
Yeah,
you know,
the objects of worship, I think.
Culture.
I love the objects of worship. I feel like it's very integral to our culture.
Yeah. Talismans, we call them on X-biking.
Yeah, okay.
Tell us
a talisman that they talk about in X-biking.
Well, your talismanic parts are going to be your, like, your classic crank sets. Also, to tie into this, I think there is an alt cycling uniform. There is like an archetypical bike that is alt.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's your White Industries cranks, you know, White Industries or Chris King hubs, mm-hmm. you know, Brooks alt. B17 saddle, mm-hmm. Berthaud saddle, or, you know, just leather saddle in general.
And there are ways to
Nitto bars.
There are ways to do like deep searches and mm-hmm. find something that's a little bit different. Yeah, but I find these talismanic components.
Yeah.
I find them to be conversation starters. I feel like they enrich the experience, they enrich the social experience of the ride or meetup or whatever. Because for me, I can only socialize generally about bikes.
When you and me ride, all we talk about are bikes. We just talk about bike parts.
I've been like that since I was a teenager, you know? And so it's for me, in order to start a conversation, there's got to be something like that to start with. And I'll be like, oh, so where'd you find those cranks? Or like, did you get those off eBay or in a parts bin? Or, you know, you just like silly. And then that starts a whole conversation. Then before you know it, you're doing our bathroom and you're a guest on the podcast. You know, mm-hmm. it's just mm-hmm. like they're great conversation starters. And yeah, it can be, again, cities could be an entirely different. And I look forward to hearing from our listeners, like what their experiences are.
What's Portland like? What's Austin like? Right. What's San Francisco?
Like, are people like kicking you out of rides because you don't have the uniform?
They better not be.
Like, that's crazy. You know? And so it's
because what I see is like, yeah, you have these talismanic friendships whatever because you recognize something in each other. It's like finding somebody like yourself out in the wild, you know? And so
like
you
band
connect.
T-shirt. Like a band t-shirt.
Like a band t-shirt. But then
also a part of the alt cycling uniform.
Yeah.
It is. But that's a good one that you bring up, the band t-shirt, because when there's someone else wearing a band t-shirt, you're like, oh, I bet you don't even, like, name three records,
right.
three songs. That's where the gatekeeping starts. But I don't think that happens in what you guys are talking about, where you recognize a White Industries delicious something and you go up and talk about it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, gender essentialism says that men connect talking about things and women connect talking about more abstract things.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for that kind of connection, which is anti-gatekeeping. I mean, the origins of the, if I could get into the theory of gatekeeping, started with social psychologist Kurt Lewin in 1943. But he was talking about how, like, food is decided by a household, like what food a household eats is decided by like the woman because she's going shopping for the food. So whatever she's buying, you're eating, you know. There's like nothing else but that. And then this other guy, David Manning White, added more of like the mass communication aspect of gatekeeping, which is like how you get information filtered through like the news or whatever it is, which I think is more relative to what we're talking about right now, is because it's like, how do you get the information? Like, how did you learn all this stuff, Alex? You had access to somebody. And like all of this information isn't really gatekept unless it's behind a paywall, you know, like the but the Radovis isn't against a paywall. Sheldon Brown's website is extremely accessible. People are talking all the time and making videos and reels about like what's on my bike, what I'm wearing. Like it is, there is so much information that I'm not really.
There isn't it. You're right about that. There is no gatekeeping now because it's all out there. Like if you want that information, there's no one holding it back from
it's
you.
It's so much out there.
And as far as like culture, like when gatekeeping, I think the point of that reel at the end, it was culture, when culture is gatekept, the culture
disappears.
Mm-hmm. I don't, that's the opposite of what I would think. Like gatekeeping is the culture. Well, gatekeeping is in the way that I think we're talking about it, where there is like these, I guess there's different ways to interpret gatekeeping, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you've got to have some rules, otherwise there's no culture to like adhere yourself to.
But it's
not rules, you know what I mean? Like there's got to be
the markers where you recognize each other. Yeah,
there's definitely like an aesthetic format, but I think there's plenty of ways
to tell you. If I saw somebody who I didn't know who followed that aesthetic format and like rode by our house right now or something, I'd be grabbing my bike, like chasing them down, being like, where'd you come from? Where are you? Want to go? You know, it's, like
that's how you met Eddie.
That's how I met Eddie. That's how I met a lot
of
people.
You've done that.
You know?
You've
literally done
that.
Before.
Because he was on Salsa or Kona or something?
No, he was on a Surly Straggler.
Okay, that's.
And he had like a tie-dye shirt on and a ponytail. And he rode by my parents' house in Clinton, like where there's nothing cool going on. And this guy rides by and I chased him down. And this is before you and I started dating. So when was this? Almost
2012?
20 years, 2012 or something. Mm. And it burgeoned into a beautiful relationship. Now Eddie's a good friend and a mainstay of our group here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, same thing with Troy. I noticed Troy's bike outside of Foodworks where he was working also probably more around 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And he had cloth bar tape on this bike. And I was like, and that was enough for me to be like, ask
That's
him about his bar mm-hmm. tape. Where'd you get that? Is that New Bombs or Tressa Star? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how we met, you know, mm-hmm. because without Troy, we wouldn't have met. So, mm-hmm. you know, you go on and on. I just implore everybody to, instead of thinking like you're going to be like all hard ass about this and be like, he doesn't have white industry cranks, can't come on this ride. Like, be like a puppy dog. You see somebody with a cool bike, you know, start sniffing.
Yeah.
And that's how you make friends in alt cycling, I feel.
Regardless of fitness level.
Yeah, regardless of any of that. It's just an easy way for men, male people, what do you call us?
Dudes.
Dudes. To form relationships. Mm-hmm. And we know that's a crisis right now. We need it. And these talismanic items, componentry on our bicycles, that's our way of doing it. And it's something that is fitness related also. It's like a healthy lifestyle stuff. And I just think like getting into this it makes cycling your lifestyle. It makes you think about bikes, makes you want to ride bikes.
Mm-hmm.
It's my experience. Is that yours?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And one of my thoughts is if like the gatekeeping is just in regards to like barrier for entry, because obviously no one's putting, or not everyone's going to put like $450 White Industries cranks on their 30-year-old mountain bike. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be that. Like the archetype goes beyond that price point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a culture for like valuing the aesthetics of your bicycle, and no one is preventing people from that. If anything, you know, my phone's blowing up all day with people just asking how they can build 26ers, and I show my buddies like the cheap parts that they can have a beautiful looking bike and just come thrash in the woods.
And it's such a good way to accomplish all that, you know? Yeah. And of course you could come out thrashing in the woods on like a Huffy. Who cares?
Yeah, totally. Like that's, that'd be sick.
That'd be sick. We're not going to be like, you can't come.
Yeah. I'd fucking love to see that.
Kristen rode some ATB with us. Remember from Fire in the Kitchen? Oh, she had a basket bike, really skinny tires, and did some gnarly, rudy, rocky descents
because,
on that thing.
Because she didn't know anything else.
It was just she was whooping the whole time.
She's like, oh, this is the way it is.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know,
a good point that it might be different in cities, because I feel like in cities there's more like crews, more like, and that's also kind of the fun play of like social, being social creatures.
We've always
like,
done this.
You did sharks versus jets, you know, it's just a thing that you do. And,
or you could be like, my arrowhead is made out of obsidian. Mine is made out of
a superior.
Yeah. you know, so it's always something.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Did you have?
Yeah. It does make sense that like there is that social psychologist came up with this idea of gatekeeping, because I think it is very social and it is very psychological. And it's based, I think, on the sensitivities and attitudes generations might have towards like rejection or social anxiety that really makes the gates seem much bigger than they are. I mean, this isn't, you know, the gates of Mordor. Mm-hmm. This is more like the white picket fence that you have to hop over.
And now the gatekeepers of cycling traditionally have always been bike shops.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I've had it bad for bikes since 1993.
You have it bad, like as an usher?
Bricked
up. You got it bad when you're on the phone. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've had it so bad.
Yeah.
And
hang up, call right back.
It's been my singular focus since then. The curated bike build.
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked at a shop. Started working at a shop shortly thereafter and worked at a shop until 2001. And I know
so
a lot about bikes.
Working at a shop, racing bikes, building bikes, fixing flats for 40 hours a week sometimes as a rite of passage into this bike shop.
Exactly.
And still.
I have a flush of anxiety before entering any bike shop.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, when the Ultra Romance Instagram started taking off, 14, 15 years ago now, I guess, I was like, man, if anything, this is a way for me to go into bike shops and not be scared out of my mind, because these guys seem to know me. And I could walk in now and they're like, hey, look who it is. Instead of being like, who the fuck is this guy? And
what bullshit is he bringing in here?
You know? And so even so, I just don't, you know, going into entering that cage of judgment, which is the front door of a bike shop, has always, because you feel it, you know, the mechanic, I know that this is not the norm. I don't know. Could be the norm still, but there are exceptions. But the classic bike shop, you walk in and there's a grumpy mechanic and a salesman who doesn't want you there.
Mm-hmm. That's the archetype.
You know, and the salesman who doesn't want you there, maybe they look up, you know, you have a question to ask the mechanic and you want to make sure you got everything right in your head. You know, like, is this a 68 or 73 millimeter shell? I got to get, what tube am I even looking for? How wide of a tube do I need?
And he's just like, buy a tarmac and get the fuck out.
Precisely.
It's
just it's a cliche in the bike world. To me,
a rite of passage
but,
to be shamed out of a bike shop.
Yeah, I've been shamed out of so many bike shops.
And for me, I thought that it was like a gendered experience, and because I've been made to feel like a complete fool under like many times in bike shops, and because I am a fool, like so. That's fine.
You'll be delighted to hear bike shops are equal opportunity discriminators.
That's what I've learned, is that if you consider yourself a cyclist, you are petrified of bike shops. And that's just the rite of passage. Like, yeah. You know, there are these cultural markers that we have, mm-hmm. objects of worship, talismans that we hold on to for strength, little groups and like the costumes we wear, the ritual, you know, 100 mile rides that you do, whatever it is, there are these little things. And this rite of passage, you have to go through, and it's a burden you carry. I started an entire movement for women, trans, femme, non-binary riders because I thought that it was a gendered thing. I'm like, these fucking dudes talking down to us. And we did. And now there are so many channels for all different kinds of identity to people to find their group. Like, there's Boston Queers on Wheels right up there who like do racing stuff. There'll be doing camping stuff, and that's all an exclusive group. And is that a gatekeeping thing when you're just saying we don't want any like cis males in this group because it feels a little safer, a little more a little judgment free, more supportive, maybe not as, you know, dropped rides are not a thing. But I think these things just need to be communicated. Like, what kind of a ride is this?
Yeah.
If you know that information, then it's not gatekeeping, right? Mm-hmm. It's the hoarding of the resources that is the evil part of gatekeeping. Like, you're not sharing, you're being exclusive, you're not welcome. Like, if you're doing that, that's fucked up. Don't do that.
Yeah, or maybe there's even room for that in your small, maybe that's the way you want to keep your group, super small, and like you don't want a bunch of people like riding with you.
It's kind of true, because when you're out there, you really need to be able to count on your friends, because shit could go wrong.
Yeah.
As we have
I think bottom line here to wrap this epic, this odyssey, is, you know, it's, You could have these, you know, there's hot takes. Everyone's got hot takes. There's always ways for us to improve our communities, our bicycle communities. Hi, Amala. We gotta have Amala on talking about
that's
her.
That's my mom.
You know, it's.
We don't even get keep this podcast. Anyone can just come walking in here.
The way that you could feel that you're wearing a uniform and that the uniform is something you could like branch out from that and do your own thing and still bring it to that community. It depends upon who you're riding with and who your riding friends are. I don't think it's a matter of the necessarily gatekeeping. Maybe you got to check who your friends are and what kind of attitude they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, there's always going to be a uniform, but uniforms are in like a certain level of sameness, and people get like so down being like, oh, my style's been copped again. Now everyone's doing this, you know, now I got to do something different. And, you know, like, yeah, you could subconsciously think about, like, I don't think I realize when I'm about to do something different or whatever. It's just, you know, it just happens. And it's not, you don't ever feel like I need to like, oh, people say like, oh, steel bikes, now you moved on to aluminum or whatever, you know? And it's like, no, I just want aluminum bike. It's not like
I'm still metal.
Yeah. No, I moved on to aluminum bikes in 1993.
Yeah. It doesn't even that. I don't even care. It's just a matter of, no, this is what I like right now, you know? And so it could be like a certain level of sameness, like everyone's wearing Bedrock sandals because they're awesome, or like everyone's wearing Umbros because they work, you know, it's like, or everyone's, you know, it's, you
they're can go, accessible.
Yeah. Accessible. Yeah. Or everyone's got Swift bags. Everyone's got Ron's bags or whatever, you know, it's because they're a good product.
Everyone's got Ultra Dynamica tires.
Everyone's got Ultra Dynamica because they are the best. That's why.
Those speed deltas.
Yeah.
You know, it's, if you're like actively trying to be different, then I think you got to kind of reassess your, you know, what you're going after in life, you know, like,
because the changes that you do make to your style, like switching from steel to aluminum and maybe flirting with carbon sometimes too, like all of that is just coming from
play.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, industry manufactured desire, you know, it's coming from, It's coming organically.
Yeah, and I think alt-bike is very playful, and it needs to remain that. You know, we're not, like, any shade that we throw is not serious. We know that we're
we are not serious people.
We are a bunch of nerds. We're perverts.
Yeah. We're freaks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and we're proud. And I think that's part of our tribe here, you know?
Oh, boy.
I use that word.
Please. Well, yeah, whether we're a part of those clans or not, it is like a definitive culture that has like musical tastes, you know, and there are people that already exist with those tastes. And so you bring them together, makes the world a little less lonely. You're just looking for yourself out there and in a playful way. The world is serious enough that this tool that we have, the bicycle, which is foreplay, shouldn't, it's not a serious thing.
It's not a serious thing. Don't
you
take
can take it
seriously.
Really seriously.
You can, but...
I mean,
take it seriously as in, like, this is your lifestyle. This is your life. Like, you should be
intentional
about it. Like I'm into a healthy lifestyle that connects me with like-minded friends and individuals, and I can get outside away from my screen and interact with the world in a beautiful way, you know, on aboard the bicycle,
mm-hmm.
you know, or, you know, you can just complain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so let's, you got any final thoughts here, folks?
And if you're going to complain, find a friend that you can complain.
Yeah, and then start your own thing.
And then the gates open.
The gates are open.
Yeah. Complain together. That's a great way to connect.
Yeah. We got any final thoughts before we wrap it up here?
Gatekeeping.
Well, I could keep rambling about bikes until the cows come home, so I'm just going to cut it off
here. Cut it off there. We'll have you back on for part two with your. I don't know. Are we going to have you on with Sarah? I don't know if we want Sarah alone.
I'll warm it up to her. Yeah, she's kind of shy. We'll see how she likes the idea.
All right, folks. Well, I really hope that you have enjoyed this longest ever episode of Alt Bike Now.
Oh, one more bike. I have the Gary Fisher.
Oh my God, that's right. That's a good one. It's a hybrid.
1995 Gary Fisher Alfresco hybrid. The Trek 9, what is it? Trek 750 with a Gary Fisher paint job.
What you got on there? Tires.
Tires. Ultra Dynamica. Rosé 700x42.
Yeah, those old hybrids. Sleepers, folks.
Sleepers. The 750s. Beautiful.
Oh, man. Okay.
All right.
A new contributor. So let's get into that. Who do we got?
Thank you for your contributions, Carl Severin, cool name, Robin McCall, Nicholas Appleby, any relation to the chain, Adam Johnson, Alex Getty, and Eric Wetland.
All right. Thanks.
Thank y'all.
Thanks for the ice cream money.
We've got ice cream for days. Yeah, yeah. We could even have ice cream for our friends now.
Wow. Can I have ice cream?
Yes.
Yes, you can have ice cream.
You and Sarah get ice cream.
Nice.
On us.
We will not gatekeep this ice cream endeavor.
The best place to get ice cream is Honeycomb in Chester.
Connecticut, folks. Shared. If you haven't been, it's the Paris of nutmeg country. We've got Honeycomb. We've got Minnow Coffee.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be moving into its permanent location in October.
Hmm. Exciting.
It's going to be the official Chester hub of the Nor'easter this year.
We've got the Nor'easter coming up. Exciting.
The Nor'easter coming up. All right, folks. Well,
Alex, you got a bike ready for the Vistin show?
Yeah, I'm going to do the chisel.
Hell yeah.
All right. I would recommend. All right, folks. Well, it's been a great episode. Been great hanging with my friends here talking about bikes.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. Thank you for coming on, Alex. Thank you for making our bathroom a little bit more manageable. A little bit.
Happy to help.
Making a bathroom a bathroom.
Until next week, folks, I hope y'all have a good one. Bye. You're